Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Xander, what are you drinking there?
I am drinking Session Premium Lager from Full Sail Brewing.
Full Sail. This is probably the single most common beer in the city of Portland. People love to say it's PBR, but I promise it's not. It's not. Session.
It's Session.
I have been to Full Sail Brewing in Hood River a number of times. I accidentally took a mouthful of their hot pellets once because I said, this is bitter, don't eat this, to which I said, challenge accepted. I'll put that in my mouth.
This explains so much, Xander. So many questions.
Don't do that.
No.
The warning was legit. Anyways, Full Sail Brewing is really beautifully located on the Columbia River there. They have an amazing outdoor patio in the summertime that just looks over all the full sails of the
thing.
But I mean, really good food too. Session is usually a beer I reserve for when it's over 75 or 80 degrees, which it's not today, but I was told there's a plethora of that here today, and I'm more than happy to drink these bad boys down.
We had a bit of a goth-themed party that my wife puts on every year, and somebody brought, multiple people brought Sessions. We have Session in a can. We have Session in the tiny little bottles.
Little stubbies.
Would you say that the can or the bottle is the more goth of the options?
I would say that neither is especially goth, but again, it's Portland. Right. If you throw a party, someone's bringing a case of Full Sail Session.
Fair enough.
Which is fine. Yeah. It's great. Mm-hmm. Again, I think we should review this again in the summertime when it's a lot warmer out. But I also just got off a bicycle, just biked 10 miles to get here. So I'm actually quite warm.
Mm.
So a session is delicious right now.
Spot on.
Well, speaking of bicycles and sessions, this is another session of Bikers, Dice, and Bars here recorded in Portland, Oregon. As usual, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
And I'm Tinsel, but with an L.
that was very festive.
Well, we are drinking Full Sail Session beer. I'm about to kick off a new recorded episode here. I did want to open in our intro with a little bit of information that some of you might not be aware of.
Inform us.
This is the concept of podcast chapters. Ooh. Our podcast supports chapters. I have embedded chapter marks in every single one of our episodes. If you happen to have a podcast player that supports them, you can easily skip back and forth between the different segments of our show.
Very cool.
Interestingly enough, I didn't really know what this was all about until recently, but I wanted to go and show... I wanted to show the person I was in the car with a segment of This American Life. And I went, oh, chapters. It's the fourth chapter. This is real easy. I get right to it. This is great.
It's super cool. We have a lot of listeners who use an app called Pocket Casts on Android. I use that one as well. And I first discovered the concept of podcast chapters when I was listening to a podcast on Pocket Cast that had chapters because it adds a whole new option of controls that aren't visible on podcasts that don't support it. I was like, oh, what does this do? Oh my God, I can skip the commercials. It's wonderful.
That's fantastic.
Not every podcast supports them, and not every podcast player supports them, but we do. And if your player supports them and you find a topic that, yeah, you just want to skip past, guess what? You can.
Nice.
You're welcome.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Because sometimes I go down rabbit holes. I was looking into cyclist fatalities, and I got a bunch of statistics from the National Transportation Safety Board. The latest statistics are from 2016. If anyone take a... So they don't call it bicycling deaths. They call it pedal cyclists.
What?
Deaths.
Oh, to distinguish from motorcycles, sure.
Yeah.
You're thinking it's like flowers?
Petal cyclists.
You know, when you bike with the flower... Hippie bikes.
Mm.
Anyone care to take a guess of the 2016 deaths of pedal cyclists in the country?
The number of deaths?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just wager it's somewhere around 10,000.
Okay.
I have no idea how many car deaths there are, but I know that's
there's
very
about
high.
Like 40,000 or so.
40,000, really?
I think. It's like 30,000 to 40,000 a year.
So it's got to be less than that, bicycle deaths, right? But I can't imagine it's more than 10,000. Seems like a lot of people.
Jacob?
27,000.
840.
Thousand?
840.
Oh. Total.
No.
Really? Wow.
It's a genocide.
Well, good on you, bikers.
I was overcounting the number of kids who end up dying every year just due to misuse accidents.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is... it's the number for under five in 2016 was zero.
Wow.
That blows me away.
Kids are actually not very likely to die in bicycles.
Fascinating.
What was very interesting, too, is the percentage of bicycle fatalities that happened in bike lanes of that number, 4%.
Really?
Which, again, shows how important proper bike infrastructure is.
Yeah, no doubt.
Is that if the vast, vast, vast majority of cyclist deaths happen outside of bike lanes, maybe make some more bike lanes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder how many of those deaths are caused by automobiles and how many are caused by hitting static objects, car doors and that kind of stuff.
I don't think you're nearly as likely to
die
from static objects.
No. We've all been there, you know. We've all run into a pole.
Sure. Or a Czech. Or a
Hungarian German. Was mad as hell.
He's picking up what I'm putting down. Interestingly enough, more fatalities happen during the day than at night.
That doesn't surprise me either.
I mean, I guess because there's more people biking during the
and more people driving.
Day and more people driving.
Just more busy.
51%
during the day, 45% at night. The deadliest time to cycle is between 6 p.m. and 8:59 p.m.
Hmm. That doesn't surprise me either.
Magic hour.
And what was interesting to me, because I very much view things like cycling to be a very unisex thing. I mean, unlike some other things, I feel like both genders bike probably pretty equally.
Yeah.
Any guess on the percentage difference between male and female cyclist deaths?
I have no.
Oh, in deaths. Yeah. I imagine that males are considerably higher than female
sure
deaths.
Are.
Yeah, because they're more stupid about taking chances. I mean, I'd say they're probably 40% higher than the number of female deaths.
Yeah, so the number of cyclist fatalities, 84% male.
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. That makes sense to me. Yeah. For the same reason that Lynn
said. Yeah, males are dumb. Yeah. Like, historically, stupid.
I'm going to make that light, for sure.
Oh, yeah, 100%. No problem.
I got that light.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
How often does cross traffic start right away?
People usually give a second, yeah? Yeah.
I'm sometimes surprised that I am alive. Because of the idiot things that I have done on a bicycle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I did not realize fully the depth of what I was doing at the time. But there's been a number of times where I was not paying attention, where I was lost in thought, where I was listening to music or something, and I blew through a light in the middle of a busy intersection with cars coming the other way that I didn't even realize until after I had passed them at just the right moment. And that's enough to make you never fucking do that again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and even, you know, being a car driver sometimes and seeing a cyclist do that, I'm just going, yeah, I'm never going to be that guy.
What is it about near-death experiences that give us that insight into...
Some of us.
Some of us. I guess that's true.
Well, it also depends on how much you want to live, too.
Yeah. Oh,
like, damn it, that was just... not close enough.
That seems like the wrong attitude.
Okay.
Life is measured in years. Living is measured in fractions of a second. Yeah. And some of us really like living.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the other thing I found interesting was the age group in which most people were killed.
Teens.
20s. No, not even close.
40s.
It's the elderly. Really? It's like the 50 and 60 year olds out on bikes.
80s.
The two largest age groups were 50 to 54 mm-hmm. and 55 to 59.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it was
wow. Because those people when they get in those accidents, they get really hurt.
Well, Well, and also, are those think deaths by accidents, or are those deaths by people who are kicking a clog out because they finally decided to get healthy, jumped on a bike, and suddenly
I think that's what it is.
And their heart burst.
I think what it is people in that age range are like, all right, I got to take more health. I'm going to go on a bicycle. I'm going to go back to it. I haven't done that in years.
Decades.
I think that's what it is.
Should have stuck with the mall walking.
Yeah. Go to the mall. Walk. Have a Cinnabon.
And interesting, too, this one actually really, really surprised me. The amount of cyclists that are killed by having a blood alcohol content of 0.08% or higher.
Wow.
Cyclists are more likely to die when they are drunk than when a car is drunk and hits them.
Correct.
Wow. Yep.
Which I thought was really fascinating. So 141 of the 840 cyclist deaths were because of a blood alcohol content on the cyclist part of 0.08% or higher.
Wow.
90 deaths were because a driver hit them with a blood alcohol content of 8.0 and higher, or 0.08 and higher.
I mean, bad on both sides of that coin.
No, bad on both sides, but I thought drunk drivers would kill more cyclists than a drunk cyclist would kill themselves.
Yeah.
All right, so Dr. Gerrymander, I got to know, where's all this cycle murder happening?
Ah, good question. So of the 50 U.S. states and District of Columbia, any guess as to the deadliest state to bicycle in?
Well, generally speaking, it's got to be somewhere cold, right?
New Jersey.
Like, I feel like the chances of Texas or Arizona having a ton of cycling deaths is low, just because generally speaking...
They shoot them down there.
They shoot cyclists. Okay. We don't like your kind around here.
Based on my prejudices as a city boy, I would say either New Jersey, California,
mm-hmm.
or Washington.
I'm going to guess Massachusetts.
Colorado.
Ooh. I think a city, yeah. I think a big city like Boston has a bunch
full
of
bunch of massholes.
Deaths.
Yeah.
Massholes. Yeah. And they're young, too.
Yeah. You thought of Massachusetts, but yeah, I'm going to New Jersey.
Okay. So given the fact that you're pretty likely to die when drunk and you're in your 50s to be the biggest.
New Jersey.
Florida.
Fucking Florida.
I gave Florida, you guys all man. The pieces.
God, that place is the worst.
How many of those deaths become a Florida Man article?
No. What I want to know is how many bicyclists are reported dead due to bicycle and golf cart accidents.
Mm.
Interestingly enough that you bring that up. So the National Transportation Safety Board has it categorized by types of vehicle.
Did you just say the mass hole?
National Transportation okay. Safety
sorry,
Board.
Still
yeah, sorry,
okay.
we mass still went to massholes in Boston. Yeah. Shout out to all the massholes out there listening. It's categorized by, sedans, big trucks, pickup trucks, SUVs, etc. The very bottom is unknown or other.
Yeah.
So I think there was like 39 of those deaths were an unclassified type of vehicle,
which makes
me think golf cart or tank.
Mm. Golf carts. Tractors.
Electric powered scooter.
Because I've known a couple people who died.
Ornithopter. It's Florida, you know.
Yeah.
Deck chair with balloons on it.
Yeah, who knew? Do they have a category
for... How did you die by a Zeppelin? I don't understand.
It was very small.
If the Federal Aviation Administration can list no less than 4 airplane accidents being caused by armadillos.
Mm. Wow. I didn't even know armadillos flew.
The South is a weird
flew.
Place. Well, I mean, flying and
jump.
Flying and flying through the air are two different things.
Wait. Florida is not the South.
Okay. I didn't say that.
Oh, I thought you said the South is a weird place.
Well, he's saying what armadillos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think
the Southwest is what I really meant.
Florida, there are armadillos in the panhandle.
Oh, no. Sure. The southern part of Florida that's not in the South.
Part of the South.
Yeah.
The northern part of Florida, which is the South.
We accept the panhandle.
Oh, yeah. Pensacola is great.
Yeah.
But Tampa can fuck right off.
Some measure of
great. I've been to Dolphin Island. It's pretty cool. So Florida has 6.69 cyclist deaths per million residents, and you consider that they have 23 million residents.
That's not a small amount.
That's not a small amount.
They're also high for motorcycle deaths as well.
Bet they are. Whereas Oregon, where we are right now, is 2.44 cyclist deaths per million residents. So we lose about 9 or 10 people a year to cyclist deaths in the state.
Huh.
Okay.
Which puts us right around Indiana and Iowa.
Is that good company?
I mean, considering that we have infinitely better cyclist infrastructure than I think that they have.
That's a good
point. It's not. Yeah. We should be doing better.
Now I really want to know how many New Jersey has.
I think I might still have it. I can pull it up really quickly.
So that brings us to the second part of this topic, which is something that I noticed a lot when I moved here and that I've never seen anywhere else.
So ghost bikes.
I'm unfamiliar with this concept.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What is a ghost bike?
You might have seen them on the streets of Portland. A ghost bike is basically a bicycle that has been stripped of all of its components, painted all white, and chained or locked to the closest thing to chain or lock a bike to, usually covered in flowers or some kind of plaque or memorial.
Oh, a memorial. Sure.
And that is the nearest intersection where a cyclist was hit and killed by a car.
Gotcha. Okay. I think I have seen those.
Sometimes it'll even be the bike they're riding.
Sure.
Yeah. And they might just go and strip it down and then just paint it white. And so it's basically, so this movement apparently started in a place I would not have expected it to have started, St. Louis, Missouri, back in 2003. And it was basically just a reminder that it was created as a reminder to both cyclists and to drivers that whenever you see one on the side of the road, someone died here.
Sure.
On a bike.
Yeah.
And again, there's a fair amount in the city. You can see them. It's spread rapidly, obviously, since then. It's international as well now. And Linsel, you said you didn't know what those were all about.
Yeah, I'd never seen them. I've seen those bikes, although I'm struggling to remember where in Portland I've seen them.
The first one that comes to mind, that because I used to live in that neighborhood, is Southeast Stark and like 27th.
Yep. Okay. Yes, that was actually a pretty bad case.
Yeah. Well, I think there might be two there. Oh, geez. Or I don't know, because I know that there have been multiple deaths at that intersection.
They fixed it very recently, actually, which was nice.
How did they fix it?
They put in a lot more bike infrastructure and an actual new pair of traffic lights there.
Okay.
That inner southeast zone from like 27th up to 39th by the Belmont Library all the way over to Hawthorne, at one point had like four or five ghost bikes.
Oh, really?
It was like
a bad stretch.
One of the densest places.
And that's where I used to live.
I wonder what the city's policy regarding them is. Like, are they kind of just left in perpetuity? Or I guess if a neighbor like gets tired of it, they could complain or they get
That's
stolen.
An interesting
or,
question, I mean, because
I want to be that neighbor.
if something was left out for years, I can imagine that if a bike was, you know, left as a memorial and had been there for years, that it would get rusted. And
I've never seen one taken down.
Yeah.
I mean, I've lived in neighborhoods for a couple of years, usually every single time. I live here for four or five years, and I've never, you know, seen one be removed.
I imagine it would be a pretty insensitive and difficult thing to do.
Right. I am quite certain I've seen them stolen.
Unfortunately, which is also just kind of a fucked up thing.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyways, if you want more information on ghost bikes, ghostbikes.org is the website that kind of started it all. And there's actually a really cool segment on the website of a kind of how-to manual to go and, you know, strip a bike down, paint it all white, what kind of paint to use to make sure it's weather resistant and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
So if you have any, have anyone that you've known that has, you know, died in a cyclist accident, maybe unfortunately, they will tell you how to go and make a proper loving memorial for them.
And in case you're interested, there are several bike shops in town that will include a link on the show notes that will actually do some of the work helping you on a ghost bike.
Nice.
So what are our thoughts on ghost bikes in general?
They are, for me, they serve their purpose, which is raising awareness. Every time I see one, I remember like to look it up later, or at least it makes me think about, am I paying enough attention? And as a biker, I'm constantly trying to remind myself to pay attention and pull myself out of my thoughts. And just seeing a ghost bike, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. Someone's going to die.
Mm. Yeah. Well, especially when you talk about the statistics for how many people are dying from bike deaths in Oregon every year, the thing that I start to think about is, you know, is this something that's going to be in perpetuity? You're going to have like hundreds of these ghost bikes over time, right? I mean, ultimately, that ends up making some of those bike corridors, I mean, just littered with that, which I think is a good reminder. But at the time, there's certainly a macabre quality to it as well.
Yeah.
Not there's anything wrong with macabre.
There's a lot of differences between the bicycle community and the motorcycle community, and one of the biggest is the sense of community. And so I see ghost bikes fulfilling a role that doesn't exist in the motorcycle community, because it's a reminder for everybody out there on the bike, on bicycles, what chances they're taking, what the risks are, a reminder that, you know, they're all in it together, and maybe they'll do something small. As a friend of mine once said, it's, I stopped to help someone patch a tire on the side of the road just strictly because I had been riding past a ghost bike to work for 2 months straight, and that could have been me.
Yeah.
I've made a point to go and buy the most obnoxiously bright flashing light vest possible that I walked into the studio with today.
It's like an alien enters the building.
Yeah. You could see ravers maybe get into something like this.
You could direct air traffic with that vest.
Wow. Sure could.
Yeah.
You know, and I've made a point to make sure that I do everything I can to make sure that I'm safe on my stupid long bike commute. And, you know, but the, again, seeing those ghost bikes, and I think in the city of Portland, we had like 3 or 4 or 5 a year. And I think that, you know, they're a solid reminder of, yeah, it can be dangerous. And let's just all just pay more attention to each other. Absolutely. And let's just all go and just keep an eye out. And, you know, don't get distracted. There's lots of distractions in cars these days.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Right on.
Well, at least here in the States, we are dealing with an annual period where we have a series, at least 3, sometimes more, nationally recognized commercial holidays that strike us that are also considered family or party holidays. They're the kind of events where your regular cycle of life is temporarily interrupted for the progression
for Jesus Christ.
Not wrong.
You know, for some dead pilgrims,
don't
for
get
Jesus
me stirred.
Christ, and whatever else you may believe, the fact of the matter is we have from the end of September, or from the middle to the end of September, straight in through the beginning of the new year, you have a month and a half or more of holiday season. What that means is your gaming schedule is disrupted.
Oh.
Totally fucked.
You want to play on a, you want to meet on a Thursday? Well, guess what? Thanksgiving's on a Thursday. You want to meet on a Saturday or Friday? Well, guess what? Probably the holidays on that.
Sorry,
too.
I'm flying from Poughkeepsie seeing my freaking maiden aunt.
It's made even worse because Christmas and New Year are exactly a week apart. So let's say you just happen to game on a fucking Tuesday.
On Tuesdays
this year, Christmas is Tuesday and then New Year's is Tuesday. So it's like, yes, it's frustrating.
That's no bueno.
No bueno.
Except that I cut it off this year.
The problem is,
quit rubbing it in.
If you are into gaming, tabletop gaming specifically, you got a D&D group, you got a regular tabletop group that meets, you try to do it weekly, you're in for a world of disappointment.
Sorry, I've got the kids right now because, you know, they're not in school, so that means I can't do anything.
Yep.
I'm sorry, my partner's out Christmas shopping for the family, and I'm got to stay at home.
Got to watch the game.
Yeah.
With the uncle who keeps telling those jokes.
We had to replace
every year that we tell him not to.
We had to replace our gaming table with a Christmas tree. So no games.
Yep.
So we can all reschedule to next Thursday. Oh, I'm sorry. I just found out that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is going to be on TV. And it's like this family event that we do every year.
Great. You know, can't wait to watch that again.
Disney on Ice is in town. We got to see it.
The upside to all this is it gives us a lot more reasons to
drink. Is that It's a Wonderful Life?
So, yes, it gives us a lot of reasons to drink. And one of those reasons is that your gaming group is that your source of gaming nerdly joy is disrupted. That's not the worst part, though. It's disrupted so frequently and so reliably that by the time you get it back together come January, well, that's a big if.
Yeah. And everybody's forgotten where you were, what was going on. Yeah. All of the threads have been lost.
Yeah. Then you have to spend a session recapping No bueno.
No bueno. No bueno. Maybe the key is to start your games in January and just make sure that your games end.
Here's
by
our
September. 11
month campaign.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Hey,
boom.
Hey, you know, that's an option. But before we get into ways to solve it, I do want to identify at least what I feel are the two biggest contributors to gaming groups either falling apart or switching gears, stalling, changing over the holidays.
New jobs.
No. Oh. Well, the two big things are scheduling issues. We've talked about that. You know, the family, you've some work. Some people have to pull doubles. Some people don't get off for those holidays. Some people have to work Black Friday kind of stuff.
Some people are the low end of the totem pole at their new job, and they have to work on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah, I know. Sorry. But then vacations. You got to go off and see your family. Some people leave the state. Some people...
never
come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people never come back.
Some people have their families come to them, and that's even worse.
And so that leads to too much downtime. However, the other one, the other big disruptor, is what I call the new shiny.
Yeah. The new shiny.
You got a new DVD of a movie that's put you in a different state of mind. Mm. Someone gifted you a gaming book, or maybe you gifted yourself something new arriving. Maybe a new show, a new book, something else has changed your frame of mind, and now you no longer, as a gamer, as a GM, or the player, wish to participate in the game that's happening currently.
Hmm.
And you've now had a month and a half to think on your new shiny. By the time you come back in January, we meet up together, and somebody's like, yeah, I know you guys are enjoying some D&D, but I really want to play Star Wars right now. Because, you know, Christmas Day is when that Star Wars movie came out, like sure. I always do, and we waited, and we were first in line, and kind of stuff. Those are my biggest, that's what I got. Anybody else got anything?
You know, I will tack on to that stress. I think that this season makes everything so much more stressful, and the results are that the games, when you do get a chance to play them, often people's nerves are kind of a little bit frazzled, or they're just not feeling able to commit themselves because they're distracted. They're thinking about other things. They're thinking about they haven't done their shopping or whatever it is. And so you end up with games that are unsatisfying because everybody's kind of got something else going on in their mind. They're not focused.
Yeah.
So what is the solution to this? Do you go and kind of try to have an email thread or Discord thread that kind of keeps things alive? Do you go and you know, post in a forum? Do you?
Well, it all depends upon how dedicated you are to this game and or this group.
Yeah.
And if
are you grateful because you hated it the entire time and now you can finally dissolve it and everything's fine now?
Well, actually, no, I was going to say on that point, my tactic in these situations is always to sabotage the game so that it is destroyed before the holidays begin. I feel like that's your best bet, is to truly destroy a game and a campaign and then be like, well, we might as well start something new in January.
I just got this Star Wars book, so. Coincidence.
Preemptive destruction.
I have the second to the Last Jedi and...
I don't think I've seen that movie.
It was that movie, has.
The penultimate Jedi.
Yeah.
I think it was Jedi, J-E-D-D-I, and I think it was straight to Netflix.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
What are those mockbusters or whatever they're called? Oh, yeah. Online communications, keeping the game going in like kind of a digital downtime, you could call it. Switching to an online format, even if it's not like a session, but having it's notes.
Temporarily or something.
And whatnot. These are all good things.
I think everyone wants to go and bugger off to that's
a good timing.
Thank you. I think everyone wants to kind of go and bugger off into a back room during a holiday party for like 20 minutes and just be like, God, I'm taking my gaming session, man. My coworkers are killing me. My boss is a bitch and I don't have enough alcohol. And I just really want to know what's going on with my paladin.
You know, I've been there. I have. I'm actually semi there right now. Jacob is in a gaming group with me that meets on Tuesdays, and we have been dealing with holiday scheduling since the end of October.
Yep.
And just getting things together and dealing with that meeting on a weeknight and work picking up, so everybody's tired in the evening, and it's dwindling, and I'm afraid this game is falling apart, and I'm hoping it doesn't, because I'm really enjoying it. So part of this episode for me is psyching myself back. Mm.
Oh, sorry. I'm taking the wrong tack.
Damn you, Linsel.
Which game is this?
This is a game called Stars Without Number that I've been running for a while. It's been really fun. We've had some ups and downs. We lost a character recently.
Yeah, again.
But I want to keep the game going, and this is now 2 months basically without playing.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you do like recaps? You do online things where you're actually like writing up what had happened in previous episodes, previous sessions?
We try to, but so that's something I love it when groups do. You need player buy-in. You need players to be people who are excited about doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be real. I'm one of the players in this group, and the players in this group are not heavily bought in on.
Sure,
that.
I got.
Well,
you.
I don't know. At least one of them has started putting together financial spreadsheets for your group.
Well, the thing is that when she's doing it at the table.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not ideal.
It's bought in at. Oh no, sir. We kind of get.
They're trying to build a financial empire, so they're like, "Oh, we need to figure out our taxes."
You have to understand. We need to understand where we can get offshore shelters and what our return on investment is.
But anyway, you're right. Having something like Obsidian Portal or a group wiki or a group database of some kind, there's a variety of tools out there to do it. They're really cool. It can't just be one person doing it.
Yeah, no.
Because I mean, that person's going to get burnt out.
I used Obsidian Portal for a while, and I ran several games using that, including a Cthulhu Tech game that survived a couple massive periods of downtime, but because blue booking, which is the term I came up in the gaming community, that was what you'd called all the writing stuff you did between sessions, because we originally did it on university blue books.
Sure.
It survived that because everybody was really into the blue booking, and it just carried us over.
Yeah. When you reach out to your players via these digital means, do you tend to reach out and encourage roleplay, or are you reaching out to give more narrative descriptions?
I like a bit of both.
Yeah.
The older I get, I do find it's harder and harder to engage in roleplay through chat.
Yeah.
So I prefer a vocal medium at minimum.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, a bit of back and forth, a discussion of things that are happening. Mm-hmm. We don't have to necessarily get into live back and forth chat room role playing. Sorry. Sure. Chat room role playing's always squicked me out.
Yeah,
it's just always weird. But at least with something like Discord, which was brought up earlier, it has the ability that it's a shared chat channel that you can log, you can search through, and you can use it as a repository. But also, it does have that connected voice chat. So, wish to kip off to the back room for a minute, as you say, and check in on your game. That's an option.
One of the things that I thought was really good when you had your, was it the Yaya?
Adventure School.
Yeah. It was one of the things that you had encouraged us to do is to kind of go and talk to the other students, quote unquote, during off hours, to kind of go and build up rapport that way with each other. And so it enabled us to go and keep character things happening with other players during times when the gaming session was not actually occurring. Do you think something like that would be a good thing to maybe try to even work into the holiday schedule coming up for some of your games?
Again, it's the same. Like, you can come up with all kind of ways to get people to remain engaged. That requires buy-in.
Sure.
And some people are going to be those players who are only engaged when they're at the table.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the older I get, the more people I play with that are like that. And honestly, I don't blame them. The older I get, the more I'm like that. Yeah. Even though I like running games, as the years go by, I become more and more of a spontaneous GM.
Less planning.
Yeah.
So, 2 points. First of all, y'all have touched on the fact that if you want your method of maintaining the game to be successful through the holidays, you kind of have to start the roots early.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have to actually build it into the culture of your game group. Like, So I was in a situation once where I was gaming with a group of people where there was me and one other person who were not a college professor. The other three members of the group were either worked at a college or were college professors, which meant when summer rolled around, they GTFO'd.
Sure.
But they were sitting around with free time on their hands all through the holidays. So Christmas wasn't our dead spot. It was the summer break. And that was the one that where we didn't have groups survive. So we built in disruption breakers through blue booking and things like that.
That is an alternate mode of gaming, too. That well, not alternate mode, but you have an alternate campaign template there where it's, this advice, this discussion might not apply to everyone, especially, for example, what if you only meet once a year and it's on Christmas and it's your old friends from back home gaming with for 40 years?
Oh, yeah, the epic reunion 12-hour session.
This doesn't really apply to you.
No, that's a very different experience.
Also, good for you.
Yeah, right on. You don't need this advice, clearly. I salute you. I'm envious.
Phil, Dan, we need to rent a cabin.
One thing that I have successfully pulled off twice in the past, and I say this because it's also the only two times that I have salvaged a game through the holidays, and I'm considering doing it again with our current one, and that is treating it like a television season break.
Sure.
Where you come back to the gaming table with the same show, but a new season and possibly a new showrunner or a new writer. As if it's coming to it fresh, not quite a reboot, but taking the game that you are running and having time pass, possibly the same amount of time that has passed since you last played. Okay, we last played 2 months ago. Well, 2 months of time have passed since you last did your thing. During that time, how about each of you at the table just think of a thing that your group might have done in that time, and we'll do a quick recap of how that went. We'll catch you up. Maybe we'll level you up.
That's a very neat idea.
A couple times.
Solid.
We'll give a couple. One of you is missing an arm. Another of you. One of you has another arm.
It's not the holidays until somebody loses an arm.
Wait, is that my arm?
How the hell did I get this orphan?
Let's do a quick random, roll of things that have changed over time. Now let's pick up. Oh,
pretty
yeah.
Crafty.
So the game opens. Someone's got a gun to your head. What's going on?
Sure.
And just pick it up right there. Start with some action and fill in the blanks as you go through the session. That's something that's worked for
me. That's a neat idea.
I'm considering it again.
That's one of the things that I've found works, where don't even try.
Sure.
Don't try to game over the holidays. Just figure out in the top of October when your last official session is going to be and when your next official session is going to be.
Sure.
And just carve those in stone, and whatever's going on, the game master starts the next session with the gun to the head, the ship falling out of the sky, the whatever, because nothing will remind people who their characters are like a little bit of fear.
I once played in a game, a Champions game, actually, when I was in high school, and we had a long-running game with a bunch of heroes, and we had a similar situation where we had a breakdown over a period of time because people were traveling away. And the one thing that the GM did, which I thought was kind of fantastic, is that he ran a one-shot. He ran, like I said, a two-parter. And in that game, we played the villains that we had fought consistently in the game. So it was in the same world, and our characters were not in it, although he made mention of them. But we got an opportunity to play some of the villains and to set up some nasty things. And then after doing a little bit of setup stuff, that business ended. And when we came back as our regular heroes the next time we played full on, at that point, suddenly we had a better insight into the villains, and we kind of knew what the villains were planning, although he swung some threw some curveballs for us. It's a great idea.
I did something similar to that, but it wasn't a beginning of the year thing. It's because half the players didn't show up to a session once of a Star Wars game that I was running that took place right after the escape from Hoth.
Sure.
We played for a handful of sessions, and then one session, like, half the group couldn't make it, but then someone else brought a couple friends to theirs, so it's like, okay, we're going to do this kind of like a one-shot. I, on the fly, came up, all right, so what's it going to do? We're going to quickly make some characters. Because with West End Game Star Wars, you could actually make some characters pretty quickly once you knew
Heck
how to do
yeah.
it. And we've been doing it pretty for a while. So it's like, make a template. I'm going to have each of you make like a fucking stormtrooper. But I'm going to give you X amount of experience to immediately invest in your character. And it was like twice as much XP as the players had had. Mm. So they were like, yeah, we're going to make some badass stormtroopers. We're going to do some fucking awesome stormtrooper shit. Cool. Hey, would it be possible for one of my characters to have like Jedi powers? I'm like, yeah, man. You'd be like a latent force user that's being trained. In fact, you're the leader of this group handpicked by Vader. It's like, dude, that's badass. Cool. Great. We're opening up. Your group is investigating the crash site of your former party. They're like, fuck! They handcrafted these characters.
To be badasses.
At the end of the session, they knew it. They're like, these guys are coming for us.
That's great. And
that was the first time in that game that they knew fear.
You want to know what'll terrify a bunch of murder hobo players? Turning their own characters loose on
No kidding. Nothing worse than that.
So coming back to something that one of you said a few minutes ago, you know, another way that you can work around this is by planning in advance and setting your game to end before the holiday.
Sure.
This works especially well if you're the kind of GM who doesn't run full campaigns, but runs like seasons, mm-hmm. you know, like a 13 episode micro campaign.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And space them apart that way. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. If you run one shots, you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You call them seasons. I call them mini campaigns. I'm a mini campaign runner. I run campaigns that are anywhere from 5 to 12 sessions long. Yeah. I usually have a rough idea, and generally speaking, I come in with a session either way of what the count I have it done. And I'll be real. Part of the reason I went from the on-running campaign that's a grand sweep to the mini campaign series that may pick up with another chapter later at some point down the road is because things like the holidays or having one of my players lose a job or, you know, sure. things like that. It's how I adapted to adult gaming.
Yeah.
This actually leads me to something that I'd like to talk about at length later, which is if you adopt a campaign preparation tactic, which is the plan in reverse, plan your game starting with how you want it to end, and then work your plans backward as if you're like a Navy SEAL team planning an operation or a Shadowrun team planning how they're going to get out of the job.
How as a GM, screwed over at the last minute by the Johnson.
Yeah. Set your plans so that you know how you want the game to end. And then everything else is just leading up to that point, and it makes it a lot easier to strategize something like that, either ending before the holiday or at least setting up a cliffhanger.
Sure.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever been in games that had cliffhangers?
I've never
had anything like that. I feel like it would be unsatisfying in some way, but
oh no, that's why just you have to like come back to the game.
I cliffhanger all the goddamn time.
Tinsel.
Really?
sometimes I've ended sessions early because you reach a point in gameplay and you're like, resolving this would take too much time, and this moment is too sweet. Mm-hmm. We're going to savor it for next time.
Mm.
Sometimes a good cliffhanger just happens during play, and you see it. You just, it's too sweet, too delicious.
Well, I'm certainly aware of cliffhangers from session to session, but it's over the break that I'm talking about. Somebody hitting me up with something dramatic and then expecting me months later to like remember that drama. Seems a little like hard press there.
You know, nothing warms the cockles of my dark little GM heart like leaving the players, knowing they're not going to be back to those characters for 4 weeks, just outside a door. And when they go through that door, they don't know whether the kindergartner is going to be a demonic entity or someone they're going to save.
Or both.
I would never save a kindergartner.
Xander, what do you think you're looking at? Yeah, I'm talking to you. You want to step outside?
Yes.
That had a lot of emphasis to it. That was good.
What's that sign? Is it Christmas presents?
I don't know, man. I'm straight out of bowl of dice right now. I don't know what you want from me.
Jacob, are you trying to pick a fight?
Wait, are you drunk?
Yes and yes, in no particular order. Tonight we're talking about bar fights.
Bar fights!
Bar fights. How to survive them and some of the experience we've had with in them.
Yep.
I'm going to say that at least three, I think four people at the table have been on numerous sides of bar fights.
Never once have I been in a bar fight.
You've never been in a bar fight.
Ooh, we got a virgin.
You know what? I'm not a bro, and I'm not, you know, like an uber masculine person.
Sometimes you're not looking for it. Sometimes the fight just comes to you. It's not about going out and looking for. I've never gone out and looked for a fight, but they have found me sometimes. I've been caught in the crossfire sometimes. It just happens.
You know, I wish that I could say in my decade of bartending that I'd actually been in a bar fight, but I think I did too good a job of de-escalating situations and avoiding bar fights. But deep within me, I've always wanted to be in a bar fight just because I wanted to see whether or not I could get away with breaking somebody's arm.
Of course. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, because that's what you want to do in a bar fight, right?
Yeah. You want to hit someone over the head with a bottle just to see what happens?
Dangerous to glassing me. People?
That seems like a bad idea.
Does it, though?
So
I want to know what happens.
You know, I don't, which is why I don't get in bar fights.
Yeah, I don't think anything good happens if you hit somebody with a bottle of liquor.
Well, not a full one.
Yeah,
I'm not a monster. I'm not a monster tinsel.
I mean, Xander, there's a reason they make Monarch.
Yeah, to light it on fire and throw it down the drain. But, I mean, you would never hit someone over the head with a full bottle of liquor. That's a waste of liquor, even if it's Monarch.
I just feel like anytime you're dealing with broken glass, it's just, you know.
So in all seriousness, I regret to say I've been involved in more than one bar confrontation.
Wow. Were you an instigator in a bar fight? Or were you
working at the bar?
Yes, I was working at the bar for one of them. Surprisingly enough, unless you're working as a bouncer, usually people don't go after bartenders.
No, it's not so much.
No.
Too valuable.
Yeah, they're too valuable. Don't bite the hand that serves you. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, that's a good point of advice out there. Don't bite the hand that serves you.
Mm. In general, bar fights, waitresses, people who work in your vehicles.
Yeah.
No. Don't bite them.
Yeah.
Tip them.
I think my passion for bar fights mostly derives from the movie Roadhouse, which I've seen too many times.
Oh, my God.
I used to be a big Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott fan. So, you know.
The number of people who I've seen starting posturing, doing moves, or dropping lines out of Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's...
Not enough. Yeah.
There's
the answer?
A certain generation where it happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And like Xander's saying, a bunch of them have been fights that just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be the long-haired guy who looked vaguely native in the bar, and someone wanted to pick a fight with a res rat, and I was going to do for the evening. And some of them have been fights I've gone looking for, just because you don't say that about my friends without consequences.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I can say the only time that I've ever had what I would consider to be a real true altercation in a bar in my time as a bartender was actually a situation where somebody drunkenly spat on one of my musicians who was playing in the bar, a fellow named Joe Janiga. He used to play for Three Leg Torso in Cosmocracy.
Three Leg Torso.
Yeah, so Joe and Courtney Vondrelli were playing in the bar one night. They were doing kind of an interesting world music thing. This little El Salvadorian guy and his wife, whom I won't describe on the air with the C word, but I do whenever I told the story in the bar, because she was a piece of work. The two of them decided that they wanted to sing with these jazz musicians. And the jazz musicians are like, this is, you know, our own music. It's not like we're doing covers. There's no vocals. So the guy starts singing drunkenly from his chair. Then when the drummer calls me over to get him to stop, the guy angrily got up and spat on him. And so I got physical. I was livid. When you see 300 pounds of angry Linzel, it's not a not a pleasant scene. And I literally like got all three of these characters up out of their table and just pushed them out of the bar. I mean, I I pulled on my old, like, high school football blocking skills and just, like, straight arm.
I'm a linebacker now.
The best thing of all is that there was some guy who was standing near the door of the bar, and he saw us coming, and he opened it, and we got him all out of the door. And then after I pushed this woman out, because she's like, you can't tell me what to do, and try to force her way back in, I pushed her into a puddle. I pushed her into the street. She fell in a puddle. Her brother punched me. I was so just adrenalined up. I was like, you are not allowed back in this bar. You were to go away. And then I closed the door. And luckily, that same guy who opened the door for me locked it.
Good.
And so they didn't come back in again. But I just remember all of the people who saw me that time were like, oh, my God, I can't. Like, yeah. It's an unnerving experience.
You know, wow. I mean, like,
that's awesome.
The only bar fight that I was involved in that I won't say, okay.
You can be proud of it.
No, I'm proud of several of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm very proud of
it's
several.
It's just not the only one you're proud of.
The one that I am the most proud of, I didn't throw a punch the entire fight. A gentleman was being rather abusive to his girlfriend. The bouncer was not doing anything about it.
Boo.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, you're hitting every one of Just Jacob's buttons here.
Sure.
So he and I exchanged some words, and he threw a punch. I had not been drinking much, and I was in much better shape back in my youth. And I just dipped back, and his fist went in front of my face. And I literally walked back. I just literally walked backwards to the door with this guy coming at me, swinging all the way up, and walked out the door. And then the bouncer, like, stood in the door and said, both of you are banned. So I'm like,
okay, goes,
you permanently. And he pointed at me. You can come back in an hour.
Yeah. Go for a walk around the
That's
block.
That's the one I was proud of.
Think about what you did.
But that also highlights what you should do if you find yourself in a bar fight.
Yeah.
First of all, know what's behind you.
No doubt. Always. No doubt.
Know who's behind you. And if you don't, get your back against something solid. If you're in a fight that's not of your making and involves more than a couple people, get yourself to a corner and get yourself out of the way. Great time to go to the bathroom, folks, if you can manage.
Yeah, no doubt.
Next to the jukebox is a great place, too.
Don't get yourself trapped in the bathroom with someone coming in after
you. And also, don't think that if there's a bar fight, it's cool for you to hide behind the bar.
No.
That's where the bartender hides.
That's where he hides with his extra fifth that he just has for such a case.
Right. Yeah, it's the job of every bartender to pop up at some point during a bar fight and smash a bottle over somebody's head who probably didn't deserve it.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Based on every movie that we've ever seen.
I was saying that earlier, and you're giving me shit for that.
I'm giving you shit about really hitting somebody with a glass bottle. I think it's a bad idea.
And there is a difference between a bar fight, which is, you know, 1 to 4 people, you know, pushing, shoving, maybe punching.
Oh, okay.
And then a full-on bar brawl.
Brawl, sure.
So New Year's Eve is coming up pretty soon.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
And I remember when the last full-length Tom Waits, all my bar fights have to do with Tom Waits. It's really weird. So
really?
Yeah. So when
several of mine do, too.
It's weird. I don't know what it's weird. So the album Bad as Me had just dropped. And the last track on that album was New Year's Eve. And I had this idea in my head when I was living in Irvington that I would go to the new 715 bar, which is a dive amongst dives. And I would go, and on December 30th, as it turned to December 31st, I was going to play New Year's Eve on their internet jukebox just so I could hear it at a bar on New Year's Eve.
Hmm.
So I fulfilled my duty doing that. And shortly thereafter, there was this really skinny white woman and this kind of larger black woman. They started like yelling at each other in the middle of, like, I don't know what the hell happened. It just happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, the fingernails came out and they clawed at each other.
Oh, jeez.
And hair started flying everywhere. And then all of a sudden, most of the men tried to break up the bar fight, where all the women on the respective sides started chucking all of their glassware into the fray.
Yep.
Oof.
And it erupted so fast. And I remember trying to go and help someone up off the ground. And then all of a sudden, I got hit really hard in the lower back, but what I assume was a bar stool, because I went down pretty hard.
Oh, God.
And then the only bartender on staff ran outside with the phone, called the cops. 2 minutes later, 5 cop cars show up. They ordered everybody out of the bar. And At this point, I feel so bad for the bartender because I'm in the industry. I start picking up all the broken glass.
Yeah, no kidding.
So the cops don't kick me out of the bar. And amongst the broken glass are now like fake nails and hair and earrings and just a bunch of, you know,
fight memorabilia.
Yeah. I'm like, oh God, this got bad real fast.
Yeah.
And my back still hurts. And I still don't know what happened or why I got hit.
We got to scrape that shit right into the garbage.
And that underlines one of the important rules. Don't get involved in fights that didn't come to you.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I was trying to help people.
I know, but it's
I've learned my mistake.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to go to the floor.
Yeah, no.
And I did.
Yeah. If you get on the floor, get on your butt and scoot towards a wall. It, you know, be prepared to cover your face.
Not to mention most bars, the last place you want to be is the floor anyway.
Especially in most bars where fights happen.
Do you think that bars are, there's something about alcohol and bars that leads people to like want to join in a fight? People who would not normally be drawn to violence, the notion of a bar fight, there's an allure, perhaps?
A romanticism.
Yeah.
It depends on the bar. Like if we were at McMiniman's Edgefield.
No.
If
that was a bar fight.
And that was a bar fight, which has happened.
Sure.
Yeah. No one's going to jump in. No. But if
I picture most people like stepping away, trying to very much look away and like make themselves somewhere else because I don't want to be associated with that crowd.
But there is a certain kind of person who's like, oh, violence is happening? When? How can I be involved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that. In fact, just on my last road trip with my girlfriend, we were in the middle of nowhere for days, and we went to Bend on the very last.
There's a town for bar fights.
Day, and we were just trying to find pinball. Like, we're just trying to keep it cool, and someone said this place has pinball machines, and it was like $5 entry. We went, oh, go fuck yourselves. I'm not going to pay $5 to play pinball. And then outside, you know, this like short guy with a backwards visor, it's November, it's cold out there, and shorts on. And they start like swinging at this taller guy, and we're like, oh, we got to watch what happens. This is going to be good. And all of a sudden, you know, the visor gets knocked off, and then bouncer's watching all this, not giving a shit.
It's not in his bar. He does not care.
No, and then all of a sudden, you know, the short guy comes back up to the guy who got his visor knocked off, cold clocks him.
Oh.
And the guy goes down like in one fell slump. The tall guy goes down, boom. And then the short guy's friends all start like kicking and punching him, and they start doing the whole like, you know, white bro like, yeah, we got you so good, yeah, as they're like running away the entire time, like, it's like the stupid white bro dance. It was the dumbest thing.
Yep.
And then they
saw it at college bars all the
time. And
then
when they buggered off, and then the tall guy's friends came around him, and they're like doing the weird like paramedic thing. I'm like, what are they doing? And like, oh, I realize this was a group of six drunk paramedics that went out to a bar that night. And so the guy who got cold clocked and was a paramedic with all of his friends, and the bouncer's like, I guess I have to call somebody now. He's just like so not into any of this at all. But just going from the most beautiful, lovely, wonderful dive bars of Eastern Oregon to Bend.
Yeah.
And just watching just the culture clash happen.
Snowboard
so
bros.
Fast. I'm like,
snowboard
God, I hate
bros.
Everyone here.
And that raises like probably my second to last rule when it comes to bar fights. Know who you're getting in a fight with.
No kidding.
You know, you have a disagreement and some guy shoves you and suddenly you realize he's rocking a Free Souls vest over his motorcycle leathers. Smile and offer to buy the man a drink.
Yeah.
Because you are going to be fighting everybody in that damn bar. Same if they're on-duty military. Trust me.
Man, I love picking fights with on-duty military. No, thank you.
The other thing that I noticed in the other Tom Waits-related bar fight that I got into after a certain karaoke song that I was singing, I told that story before on the air, so I'm not going to relive it, was that some people want a fight because they want to just beat on somebody, but they're not actually looking for a fight.
No.
Right. They're looking for a victim.
They're looking for a victim to go and beat on. And the guy who went and kept shoving me in the face, or in the chest rather, and kept yelling at me because I unbuttoned my shirt during a cool karaoke song involving Tom Waits. as soon as Euclid put that cigarette out on my chest,
youch,
the guy just freaked. Because he wasn't looking for someone crazy. He was looking for someone to beat on. And so there is a, and you have to gauge it. Because this guy could have kicked my ass easily. But you have to gauge it. And sometimes if you out-crazy the person who just wants to beat on a bully or just wants to be a bully and beat on you, if you out-crazy them because they're not looking to actually get in a scrape, that can freak them out enough so they just go and sit the fuck back down.
Out-crazying Atlanta is how I survived. Walking around downtown at night frequently in the early 2000s. Just people would cross the street at night. I would see like crackheads coming up looking like they were about to ask me for some change, and they see this. I would always have, if I was out alone, I would adopt this crazy white man. I would just look like I was gonna kill someone.
Pull that off. I can see you pulling that off.
And people would just cross the street.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got home and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to wash the crazy off.
Gotta take a shower. I'm going to wash that crazy right out of my beard. You know, when I was traveling the world, I was in Russia. I didn't know Russian, but I did know enough that I had to have something to say to drunk Russian people who wanted to engage me. I'd be standing waiting for a bus or whatever, and some drunk guy would come up to me and just start talking to me in Russian. And the thing that my Russian-speaking girlfriend taught me was she said, "Я дровосек, я окей," which means I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. And it was a fantastic diffuser because the drunk Russian guy is like, "Wow, I don't know what you're trying to say to
you're
me."
You're in a subway. That's weird.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
Full Sail Session. It's like, I don't know. It's easy to drink.
It's very drinkable.
Yeah.
You can probably kick back a six pack of this and barely feel a buzz.
Six pack?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the percentage on that?
5.2.
Five.
That's respectable for a lager.
Mm-hmm. It's up there for a lager. And the nice thing, too, is that they've, the session line from Full Sail, they now have cream ales, which are surprisingly good. Mm. They have a very low ABV IPA, which is actually pretty good.
At my office, we have rotating tap. We have four rotating taps. At my office, four rotating taps of beer.
Yeah, no shit.
We have one cider, and then we have usually an IPA, usually something soupy that you eat and pull things out of your teeth.
Nice. Like. Yum, yum, yum.
And
nice.
And then usually there's a lighter one. And I remember one time we had Sessions IPA. Now we have a screen that tells what each of the four taps are in order, and it has a short description of it. And it's always like blah blah blah, flavorful. This amount of alcohol. This amount of bitterness, and it gives a quick like one sentence description. I remember when the Session IPA was up, the description was Sessions weak ass IPA because their IPA is pretty weak.
Wow.
But it's good.
But it's
and
good.
And it's super drinkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much everything in the session line is drinkable.
I have yet to have a bad session. All of their sessions range from good to outstanding. And I'm someone who hates lagers. I profess my hatred of lagers, but I will drink session lager any day of the week.
I think a couple years ago, it was voted the best beer in America.
Really?
Hmm. Yes.
If I can go and read the awards off of their 15, 12-ounce can, which is a really weird size.
Yeah, they have cans now. Session used to only come in stubby bottles. Yeah.
Wait, how is
U.S. Gold Beer Championships Gold Medal 2014, World Beer Awards, World's Best Premium Lager 2015, First place lager, best of the Northwest, SIP Northwest Gold Medal 2016, World Beer Championship Gold Medal Pale Lager Category 2013, and Gold Medal World's Beer Award, USA's Best Hell's...
Hellas.
Something.
H-E-L-L-E-S.
Muncher 2016.
Well, that sounds important.
So take that, Pabst, and your blue ribbon from how long ago that nobody cares 18 about?
18 fucking 90s? No one gives a shit. Session, motherfucker. Fuck that shit. Session premium lager.
Woo. This is delicious. I'm actually not drunk. I'm a little tipsy. I think I've had like five of these. This is something that you can drink casually at a party in Portland any time of the year. And trust me, it's a party in Portland. There's going to be full sail session there.
And they also have a holiday edition.
A holiday session.
They have a session green, which is a holiday one.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I had that
and
one.
It's good.
They have like a Jamaican session. They have
the session, cerveza
they
now.
Have cream. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cream's good. Their cerveza is really good in the summertime. Yeah,
Dark is my favorite.
Session Black.
Yes.
Yeah. Session Black
is so good.
I think that was the first... Not that was
see why didn't they bring that to your cocktail party?
Yeah, Session Black. Right. That seems much more appropriate.
So
you know bad goths.
Yeah,
I know bad goths.
A couple years back, I got a private gig at a party, and they wanted. I'm not going to go into the story. They wanted beer cocktails.
Okay,
so I showed up with 12 of the flats of. Different varieties of session because session was the most versatile beer to build beer cocktails.
And they have variety packs you can buy.
And they didn't at the time.
Okay.
But it was like a couple flats of the classic lager, some of the black. They had the amber had just come out during the short run of amber. And I built the cocktails off of that one, all of those. And yeah, it was
worked pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I made so much money on that gig.
Well, Session hasn't always had variety, and Full Sail, thank you for adding some variety to this delicious drink. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be drinking this for many, many more years.
Wow. Full Sail Brewing, if you'd be interested, feel free to contact us. We'll come out to your tap room, sit over the river looking at all the sails, and do a live recording of our impressions of your tap room.
Including your weak-ass IPA. This has once again been Bikers, Dice, and Bars, recorded here in Portland, Oregon. If you enjoy what you've listened to, drop us a review on iTunes. Mm. But even more so, how about stopping by our Discord channel, our Facebook page, our Twitter or Instagram profiles, and saying hi. We have various listeners who have joined in our Discord discussions.
Yeah, we got a lot more lately.
Yeah, we're trying to grow a little community there. Mm-hmm. It's been fun. We have people asking us about our upcoming episodes and what we're going to be doing next.
Putting down suggestions, which we do listen to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you ever are not from Portland or if you are from Portland and you just want to go drinking with us sometime, sure.
Reach out.
I'm down with that.
Just not on a Thursday.
And not during the goddamn holidays.
Yes.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Yeah,
maybe
whatever you do, just don't be an impediment to me getting my group back together. Anyway,
you gotta get the band back together.
Thanks for listening once again. As usual, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
And I'm Tinsel, but with an L.
And once again, we wish to remind you,
rubber side down.
Always dip your bartender.
May your dice always roll criticals.
And we will see you next year.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things.